Doogie.
Sam.
Bundesliga tax is a phrase that gets thrown around a lot. You said it last week. But is there such a thing? Does it actually mean anything? Let's explore.
Is the Bundesliga tax real? Many have claimed that players from the Bundesliga struggle to replicate their performances when moving to the Premier League. And one example of this is Jadon Sancho.
This is why I can never, ever take the Bundesliga that seriously.
In recent years, imports from the Bundesliga seem to be more missed than hit, with big money acquisitions like Pulisic, Werner, Allaire and Keita failing to catch fire in the Prem.
Bundesliga tax does not apply to Manchester City, who have signed players like Haaland, KDB, Kompany, Gundogan, Sane, Akanji.
Bundesliga tax refers to the drop-off that occurs when a player moves from the Bundesliga to the Premier League.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of The Truth. I am your host, Sam Tai. Joining me is my co-host and friend, Doogie Critchley. How are you, mate?
I'm very well. Great to have you back on English soil after your trip to Latvia. I was in Jersey myself. Jack was watching the birth of a new star at Craven Cottage.
Oh. I was wondering where you were going with that.
Yeah, I was too. It wasn't miles from Chelsea West in Stars Ball.
Yes, that is our overlord, Jack Collins, you can hear too. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Sam. I do resent overlord, I'll be honest.
We're only 3 weeks in.
I know. Not much longer if it carries on like this. I can't go on like this.
People enjoy it. People like it.
Good, I'm glad to hear it.
It really doesn't matter if you like it because the people like it. And yes, Diggy, I was away. Mm-hmm. Riga away for Sam Tai FC. Good to get out. I didn't get any summer breaks. I worked all the way through. I was supposed to take 6 weeks off between freelancing and joining ESPN. Did not. Worked the entire thing. So probably going to crash and burn at some point. But for now, I feel great.
Well overdue.
I feel great.
Latvian food and Latvian drink and Latvian archery.
I got to say, it really suited me. Riga, Latvia. It was really nice. The cuisine is very, like, it reminded me of Prague. It's meat, it's carbohydrate in its sauce, and there's not a lot of fibre going around. But that's what my body's used to. Like, that is my diet. And then add 10 beers a day, and you've got, that's my day-to-day.
Beautiful.
So the lads I was with, they were flagging by the end a little bit, and they were quite impressed at how much I was able to put away. But hey, look, this is my arena.
This is it.
This is my arena.
And so, you saw a big win in a football match as well.
Right, yeah. So, Jack, actually, last week I mentioned that I was going to see Riga FC. You said, I've been to see, and you said, and I quote, "You're in for a treat." I thought you like meant that in a good way.
No. It's an experience, is it not?
I think I went to a fake game.
Mm.
Like, it was 6-0 to Riga. They played Alder, who are like effectively their feeder team. They actually share the stadium, and there's a suggestion going around that maybe they're owned by the same person, or that person vehemently denies that.
Multi-club ownership model, you're telling me.
It is, yes, within the same league. So it felt like a bit of a fake game. It was 6-0. It wasn't particularly competitive. It was like 10 minutes for the breakthrough, and then it just spiraled out of control. But I was able to entertain myself with two things. One, you're allowed to drink beer in the stands. Hallelujah.
Solid.
And two, bumped into a long-time Ranks and Truth listener, Christers.
This is wicked.
Yeah.
This is all it.
Really cool.
Was he excited to meet you?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Christers was a patron. Many a long year. I remember him commenting on the post box.
Oh, I was excited to see him too. I mean, he picked me out just in front of the stadium as we were walking in and walked up and shook my hand, said, are you Sam? Lovely to meet him. Quick word there. And then in the second half, when things died down a bit, I went and spent like 20 minutes sat with him in the stands.
Oh,
and we just had a bit of a chat. He asked me why I left Ranks. Fair enough.
Everyone's been asking the same thing.
All the key questions. So yeah, it was good. Really, really nice. And he told me a few things that I didn't know about Latvia, about Riga, all sorts of stuff. So yeah, it was a really, really good trip.
Lovely.
And probably the best thing about it was that because I was there, I did not have to watch Aston Villa.
Yes, we've got a big game coming up this weekend. It's the Truth Derby at the Stadium of Light, Aston Villa versus Sunderland. Didn't think this was going to happen when we kicked off the Truth last season.
We were a Champions League team and you were a Championship team.
A very average one for lots of the campaign as well. But now we are the form team out of the two in the Premier League.
And
sitting
we haven't scored.
And you guys haven't scored a goal yet.
Well, hang on. So we're recording this on Tuesday night.
This is true.
Villa will play a cup game this evening. There's a chance, albeit a small one, that Villa score a goal.
Yeah.
So there's a chance that when Villa roll into their fifth Premier League game of the season, they'll be on the board.
I'm also, you know, people are always worried about, you know, cursing your own team, etc. I'm going to have to just enjoy where we are at the moment because it's not going to last forever. But to be the form side going into a clash with Aston Villa feels fantastic. And I'm excited to watch on Sunday.
There you go. Cool. Right. That's enough preamble. Let's get to the big topic because I can see you like vibrating, like chomping at the bit here. It's a topic that you've suggested, you've talked about a few times. Would you like to tee us up?
Yeah, so this is a topic that I've been thinking about and kind of found issue with for a long time, and it's the concept of the Bundesliga tax. And I think it partly stems from the fact that the guys I used to work with at Football Daily know how to wind me up. And what they do is when a Premier League side beats a side from Europe, they use Bundesliga or La Ligas or something like that in the WhatsApp group. And I, for years, used to bite back. And the Bundesliga tax was not created by anyone at Football Daily, of course. It was much more of a football Twitter term, probably kicking off around 2017, 2018, but particularly in a lot of the deals that happened around the 2020 mark.
Starting from about then, yeah.
Yeah. And it's been used as this concept that players having joined a Premier League side from the Bundesliga have generally struggled and their productivity has dropped. So goes the argument, and there is a tax on the fact that the Bundesliga is a much more transitional league and there's much more space to operate, particularly for forwards. And there are some examples of forwards that have struggled having arrived here. And it's worth talking about right now because this felt like a really unique transfer window in the use of Premier League clubs or the sort of pillaging of Bundesliga clubs by Premier League sides, because they were absolutely ripped apart by Premier League sides this year. So we saw Florian Wirtz, Jeremy Frimpong and Ugo Ekitike join Liverpool, Piero Hincapie joined Arsenal relatively late on, Gittins, Chelsea, Nick Voltimada, topic or key part of last week's podcast, who then goes and scores against Wolves
on his debut.
That's very good to see.
That's a big Nick energy right there.
Absolutely. And Xavi Simons also joined Spurs. Matthias Tell made that loan move permanent as well.
Jeez, actually, there's quite a lot here.
There are loads. And I think it's a thing we might see talked about quite a lot in the next few weeks, particularly with regards to Florian Wirtz. I would argue incredibly prematurely, but I think it's fair to say he's not necessarily lit up the Premier League in the first four games. And he started all of those four games. He's played 338 of 360 league minutes. He's yet to contribute a goal or an assist. His underlying numbers in terms of his expected goals and expected assists per 90 have tumbled. Liverpool have not looked particularly free-flowing. They're actually the first side in Premier League history to win four consecutive games scoring goals after the 80th minute. And a lot of those games have been very tight.
Yeah.
And there are a variety of reasons for that. They also haven't used this kind of system for, I don't know, how long? Pre-kind of Klopp, really, a 4-2-3-1. Pretty much since the Coutinho days, at least. So there have been some teething issues here. But before we get into any of these current transfers or more recent transfers or excuses or not for Florian Wirtz, Sam, I think it's worth going back maybe sort of 5 or so years to a lot of the examples where this tax kind of emerged as a concept.
Yeah, I think we need to go through some examples of good and some examples of bad. The Gennaro Gattuso approach to assessing transfers once again from the Truth podcast. Just a word on the tax. I mean, I took it quite literally as if you sign a player from the Bundesliga, look at their attacking numbers, goals and assists, now apply a tax because they will come down in the Premier League. I always genuinely envisioned it as a literal tax on the numbers. Take knock 20% off that. It'll never do that in the Premier League. That was the saying. That was how it goes. So I used to look at like Jadon Sancho's numbers and stuff and just knock 20% off. like I'm the tax man or something like that. And just say, oh, okay, what can we reasonably expect? And like, to be fair, there's a fair few examples here of players that have moved for big fees, 50, 60, 70 million euros, whatever it might be. And their numbers, they have tumbled down. Sometimes they rebound after an adaptation period, but sometimes they really don't. Going to start with the bad. That's the kind of guy I am. Timo Werner is the first name I'm going to throw into the ring here. So his last four seasons in the Bundesliga were 21 goals, 5 assists, 13 and 7, 16 and 7, 28 goals and 8 assists in his final campaign for RB Leipzig. Those are just Bundesliga numbers. They're not even incorporating European figures, which will be the case for all the numbers I read out over the next half an hour or so. Joins Chelsea. Crap.
Yeah.
Just crap. Like, he got to 6 goals and 8 assists in his first season, which on paper like isn't horrendous, but I think like the resounding feeling around Timo Werner was that he massively struggled and has never really recovered.
I think he struggled more at Spurs than he did at Chelsea, I would say. But
he was crap at both, yeah.
He was particularly bad at Spurs, though, I would say. He felt like he'd really lost all confidence. And what is so damaging, or damaging for my argument, which you might have guessed is kind of against this tax concept, is he goes back to Leipzig in the middle and his numbers kind of return to a reasonable level as well, which is a little bit troubling for this argument. But what I would say on Timo Werner is that he was signed just after that transfer ban, and they signed Kai Havertz, Chilwell, Ziyech, Mendy that same summer. Thiago Silva also arrives. So that's Havertz, Ziyech and Werner signed in the same summer. I think Pulisic had arrived the year before from the Bundesliga as well. And suddenly, I think it was Frank Lampard at the time. It was Frank Lampard at the time before Tuchel came in and they eventually won the Champions League. But suddenly Frank Lampard had a variety of different options available to him and didn't really ever settle on how best to get the best out of them. Mm-hmm. But Timo Werner, and you could maybe mention Nkunku in due course as well, it does feel like RB Leipzig signings, particularly in attacking areas, have been the ones that have struggled the most.
I think that's a fair thread to pull, in that RB Leipzig's team style is so, let's go with unique, for want of a more negative word, but let's just go with unique, that people don't translate well out of it. And maybe there's an element of Bundesliga to Premier League at play, but also with the Leipzig added on top, it is quite difficult for them. Look, Nkunku, like, it technically goes in the bad list, but like, I mean,
he's so unlucky.
There's nothing to say here about Nkunku. He was injured the entire time. What chance did he have? And then, you know, coming back into the team with Maresca, who didn't play with a player in his position, or if he did, it was Cole Palmer. Yeah, whatever. Like, this is not his fault. Then there's a few actually that it's really not their fault at all. And Nkunku is one of them, but let's keep the Chelsea trend for a second and go to Pulisic. He arrived the year before Werner and Havertz, and as far as I'm aware, the only time he played particularly well for Chelsea was during lockdown. Mm-hmm. Lockdown Pulisic was a bit of a vibe. apart from that sort of 10-game stretch playing off Olivier Giroud, didn't happen for him.
No, it really didn't. It really didn't. And by the end, I think he was almost at a lower point than Timo Werner at the end of Chelsea, if that makes sense. It really, really was pretty poor. I mean, his final full season, he got one goal and one assist in the league. And he's joined Milan, and Pulisic feels like, even more so than Timo Werner, who's always been incredibly streaky, like an incredibly confidence-reliant player. And he's gone to Milan now, and he has been excellent since he's joined there, but he's had the whole side, along with Rafa Leao, kind of based around him. And he's really, really delivered. And he's played regularly as well. He's had fitness issues when he was at Chelsea.
Oh, yeah.
He was really quite up and down, even during his time at Dortmund as well. I think by the time actually Chelsea got him, he was a bit lower than he had been in his first few years at Dortmund as well. So Pulisic is an interesting one. I think this is probably the biggest discussion to be had in many ways, because it's got the most interesting story to it. But Jadon Sancho to Man United, Sam, because this is a player who, I saw Jamie Carragher say this on The Overlap the other day, and I didn't necessarily agree with him. And I think it was down to, which he admitted, that him and Gary Neville hadn't watched that much of him during his time at Dortmund. But he said, I'm not sure there was ever that much talent there at Sancho. Now, I think that's incredibly harsh, because Dortmund Sancho, pre his move to Man United, wasn't that far off Kylian Mbappe in terms of conversations about who is the best young player in the world. He really was exceptional.
Yeah, and the goal contributions wise, 26, then 33, then 19 in his final season. And we remember the 33 season very clearly on ranks, because, Jack, I don't know if you remember, but I put a prediction up at the start of the season that Jadon would go 20-20. Wow. 20 goals, 20 assists. And he was like, I think it was like 17 and 16, I guess. Not far off.
It was amazing.
And, I mean, that is incredible. Apply however much tax you want to that. That is a lot of goal contributions. He was brilliant. I think people did misunderstand Jadon Sancho a little bit. I think people probably thought he was more direct and probably quicker than he actually is. Mm-hmm. He was more a player. He is more of a player. He's still in his mid-20s and plays for my club. he is a player that thrives on sort of closer combinations, working in tight spaces. He wants fullback overlaps. He wants to be able to
Hakimi,
work his way
into
the box.
Hakimi,
yeah,
Sancho.
I mean, you know, Sancho playing right wing with Hakimi bombing around the outside of him was a dream, an absolute dream. And he's a player that needs to be furnished with the right conditions. He wasn't the player that could go into any situation and stand out because he had that much star quality. I would also disagree with the idea that he never had that much talent, because I watched Jadon Sancho from an England under 17 all the way through, and he was the best player on the pitch every time. And that pitch had like Phil Foden, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Morgan Gibbs-White. It had all of those players on, and he was always the best. So I don't really agree with that assertion.
I totally agree. I think the issue was at Man United is, and we're seeing it at the moment with the discussion around their midfield, is Man United fans and the way that the media talk about Man United, they love to put it all on one position, one thing that is missing. At the moment, it's all about the midfield. Before Jadon Sancho arrived, it was, they don't have a right winger. And Jadon Sancho arrived, and actually a lot of his best games at Dortmund, and he's actually always said that he prefers to play on the left. He likes to invert, he likes to link up. He can almost play, I think, ideally, some games in the Premier League, if he'd played more as a 10 without Bruno Fernandes, that could have more seen the best of him, really. But he arrives the same summer that they sign Ronaldo and Varane. Ronaldo wasn't really a signing that the club planned. It was more a kind of emergency, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said we effectively had to because we couldn't let him go to Man City. I think it's crazy to put all the problems of the next few years on Ronaldo. Obviously, it wasn't, but it was never a particularly comfortable arrangement. His first two seasons, he scores 12 goals in his first two seasons. His first summer, Antony then arrives. September 2023, he falls out with Ten Hag. Ten Hag accuses him publicly of not performing in training. Sancho, which has been a consistent thread in the last few years, takes to social media and it backfires. There's then that standoff. He then goes eventually to Dortmund at the end of that season or the start of January 2024 and plays okay at Dortmund. I don't think it was as good as people remember, but he does have one exceptional game against PSG in the Champions League where he completes 13 dribbles in one game. Sancho of old. And that was against Nuno Mendes as well, Nuno Mensch. And yeah, looked really, really exciting. Last year at Chelsea, I would describe as fine.
Okay.
But no more probably. And for them not to take up the clause to sign him permanently, that's another embarrassment against his name.
Yeah.
He's always been writing on Marcus Rashford's Instagrams like freedom and silly statements like that. And I think Jadon Sancho, all these cases I would say are quite individual. And a lot of the cases we've talked about in players joining Chelsea and Man United, they are very high pressure environments. They are pretty ruthless clubs, particularly Chelsea in terms of how they churn through talent. Even in the pre-Clear Lake Capital days, Abramovich's Chelsea were pretty ruthless as well. And Jadon Sancho goes into a pressure cooker that is Man United, expected to be the next big thing, struggles with the pressure massively, has, by all accounts, according to reports that know far more about this than me, has a difficult family setup, not that much support off the pitch, and he completely flounders. And the last few years have been a really sad, sad story. Do I think it was down to the Bundesliga and not preparing him for the Premier League? No. I just think the situation around Sancho and his stubbornness and unwillingness to sort of bend, having made this mistake with Ten Hag, has kind of created a domino effect where he struggled to reclaim his career.
Yeah, there's a lot of mitigating factors here. I mean, there's probably more mitigating factors than for anyone I've ever I can think of in football, to be honest with you. It's just gone wrong at every step for Sancho. And that is not to completely bypass the fact that he has underwhelmed on the pitch at points. And disappointed two different fan bases in the Premier League, I guess, over the time when he has been able to play. But there's just been a lot going on. Like, elite players need good surroundings. And also working in Sancho's favour is who, apart from Bruno Fernandes, has joined Man United recently and done well?
100%.
Like, almost no one. And mitigating factors is kind of the name of the game so far, because Nkunku, I'm completely disregarding because he was injured so much. Sancho, we've just talked about it. Pulisic actually missed a hell of a lot of games. So he missed 53 games in 4 years, and he averaged over the course of four seasons just 1,400 minutes for Chelsea, which is like not enough. So he had a bit of a tough time with it as well. Obviously, you talked about it, but a year after signing him, they then added like Werner, Havertz and Ziyech, I think.
Same
like,
summer.
I mean, and I swear Lampard didn't want half these players. And that feels like the name of the game here in terms of mitigating circumstances. I want to bring up Kai Havertz since we're kind of on the Chelsea-Man United theme. I don't think Kai Havertz belongs in the bad list because I think he's actually done very well to rise out of this. But for the 3 years, he was probably in the bad list. And again, if you want your mitigating circumstances, we're sort of told by Dean Jones that Frank Lampard never really wanted him in the first place, didn't fancy him, didn't want to work him into his team. Much preferred Mason Mount, obviously. Kai Havertz got COVID when he arrived and was injured. And it's like, these things matter. He did underwhelm for 3 years. He probably saved his Chelsea career with one very specific and famous goal. But he's done well to basically redeploy himself as a striker and work his way back out of it. Of all the failures, in quotes, I think he's the only one that's ever actually beaten his way out of a, you know, sort of risen from the mire, whereas everyone else has basically just drowned.
Absolutely. I mean, Arsenal was still prepared to pay, was it 55, 60 million pounds for him? And I remember a lot of fans laughing at the time. And I'm not suggesting that he should have stayed at Chelsea or Chelsea shouldn't have sold him, because at the time that was a fairly good recoup on what he'd given them. Yeah. But he's done really, really well, especially having initially been signed as a midfielder by Arteta, and that was the whole concept, to kind of deputise for 18 months as a striker. And about this time last year, maybe in a more like a month's time on The Truth, we did an entire podcast on whether Kai Havertz was now officially world-class, because he'd started that season so well, then gets injured in around January and hasn't really recovered fitness-wise.
The thing that always makes me laugh with Kai Havertz is that it doesn't matter. He's kind of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. Like, when he started the season, there was a major thing about, like, oh, Kai Havertz isn't good enough to be the number nine. Like, Arsenal fans up in arms. And then at the end of the season, it was like, yeah, well, we didn't win the league because Kai Havertz was injured. You know, well, I don't mind which, but pick a lane. Like, just pick one of the two sides. That's all I need people to do. But yeah, a phenomenal footballer. And I will stand on that hill until the day that I die.
Ballon d'Or, Jack.
That one might have been a tad too far.
Okay.
But alas,
fair enough.
We all make mistakes, Sam. We all make mistakes.
Yeah, we certainly do. 3 years, another move within the league, a position change. And then finally, he kind of gets to the point where he needs to be. And, you know, he got to 13 goals and 7 assists season before last, at 9-3 before he tore his hamstring. He was having a good season last season. Obviously, that's why we talked about it. So a bit harsh for him, but he doesn't belong in this list. But I wanted to wrap him in because he kind of simultaneously occupies both columns, but also neither of them.
Yeah.
Just because it's been such a strange ride for Kai Havertz. Speaking of strikers, Sebastian Allaire, another one that you can apply mitigating factors to. I'll take this one. He joined for £40 million and his manager said, no. I mean, how bad can it get from a starting point? You know, David Moyes really just wanted Mikel Antonio to be stuffed into a cryogenic freezer and preserved forever and ever and ever. He only wanted him. He didn't want Allaire. Allaire didn't run the channels. What use is he to me? Imagine signing for all that money and only to find that your manager doesn't think you fit their system. And like, within 18 months, he was gone. But he failed. But he didn't really, did he? He was failed.
Well, exactly. And you look at what he did since. You know, he had a phenomenal goal-scoring record for Ajax. I think it was 47 in 66. He then goes to Dortmund. And for a spell at Dortmund, looks absolutely brilliant too. And then gets diagnosed with testicular cancer, comes back, etc. And, you know, the last few years is kind of winding down now. But also, side point, like, which striker does succeed at West Ham? I don't think that's purely a Bundesliga prospect.
Niklas Füllkrug? No, add him to the list. Yeah. Just add him to the list.
And then a couple of more sort of sad cases, which I don't... Naby Keita came with the biggest reputation probably of any signing in that small period. I mean, it was around the same time as Paul Pogba, but I remember, maybe because we were all stats nerds at Football Daily, but we were so excited about Naby Keita when he was at RB Leipzig. But unfortunately, the guy just couldn't stay fit.
Leipzig, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, his games missed per season went 15, 20, 35, 12 and 40. And then he joined Werder Bremen as a free agent in June 2023, and he's now playing for Ferencváros. Like, it's just a sad story. Same with kind of Henrik Mkhitaryan as well, signing from Dortmund, who again looked absolutely brilliant, but went from Klopp's Dortmund to Jose Mourinho's Man United. And he was poor at Man United, but he was even worse at Arsenal. And fair play to him for turning it around at Roma and then into Milan, but that one didn't work out either.
Yeah, I look, scratching around the memory banks a little bit here for Mkhitaryan, because when he was in his pomp, it was genuinely like over a decade ago.
Yeah.
But he was like blistering at Shakhtar Donetsk. And I distinctly remember thinking that he looked like the way Kaká ran with the ball. I was thinking that he looks like Kaká. So he joined Dortmund. I was super excited. I think he was good, but still a bit hit and miss at Dortmund. And then in the end, I was like, oh, I'm actually a bit surprised he's moving to the Premier League off the back of this. It's like a reverse chain of form. I remember him feeling quite a bit slower. in the Premier League and significantly less decisive in that Man United team. Then he went to Arsenal. Didn't he get like 4 assists in 2 games in the first 2 games and everyone went mad, and then he didn't assist again for like 3 months or something?
Quite possibly.
Look out, Jack Grealish.
I barely remember his Arsenal stint whatsoever. I remember he was signed the same summer that they signed Pogba and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and that's, you know, right, that's going to take up a lot of headlines, yeah, and space in your team.
But probably a little bit miscast here. And it's the case for unfortunately quite a lot of these players. It feels like they do get a bit miscast, like Allaire. Like, why did he end up being given to David Moyes? That's not fair on him at all. Have you got any like absolutely unmitigated failures and you cannot give them like anything at all in their column to say, oh well, it wasn't your fault? Because I've got one. Leon Bailey.
Yeah. He did have a good season.
Yeah, he had one good season in 4.
But that's. Okay, I feel like you're ready to go on this one,
I'm just gonna let
you go for it. But I thought the season before last, he was pretty useful.
He was, yeah. He unfortunately got a contract extension out of it, and then yeah, last season, just like literally every time he tried to sprint, his hamstring went. He just always looked quite frail, and quite not ready for the intensity of the league, almost, I guess. I remember watching him in a game when it was like quite heavily raining and he looked like he'd never seen a football before. And it was already spiraling into that kind of place mentally. So it was very difficult for him. And actually, to be fair, he did arrive injured. So maybe you can put that in his corner. It was a bit of a tough start. He was signed with the Grealish money for Gerrard. For Dean Smith. Mm. And then by December, it was Gerrard.
Another Leverkusen difficult lad at Villa, Moussa Diaby.
Yeah.
How do you reflect on him?
He was okay. He doesn't belong in the bad list. No way. I don't think he set the world on fire. What did he get? I've got the stats down here somewhere. Diaby got 6 goals, 8 assists in the league. He played every single game. It was only about 25 starts, say only, it's more than half. 25 starts and the rest were subs, but he played every game. I think he was like the only one that season, apart from the goalkeeper, who did. Which is, you know, keep yourself fit. I mean, well done. He often looks better in the Europa Conference League, which is often a bit of a telltale sign. But he was good. He, unlike Bailey, he could ride contact and ride a challenge, and he could sustain his run beyond just being knocked off stride, which I've come to learn is a very important trait for a winger when translating to the Premier League. So when Dan and Doy signed for Forest, I was like, good, because he uses his shoulders. Whereas like some wingers just don't, and they don't really understand how to bat people away.
I've got an unmitigating one.
Go on.
Kevin Mbabu.
He doesn't really qualify for the list.
Signed from Wolfsburg for Fulham to play right back. Got an assist in his first game against Brentford, the last goal in a 3-2 win for Alexander Mitrovic. And we were like, wow, there's something going on here. And after that, it was just disaster class after disaster class after disaster class. And thank God for Kenny Tete is all I'll say.
You have made me realise that we have listed exclusively attackers.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any defenders that moved?
The more defenders have actually been success stories. I think that's probably where we should go next, because I think it's only fair, because there are so many effective counter arguments.
Here we go.
To this. And I've been waiting, sprung, ready to explode. That's not what an
coiled.
A spring does. Coiled, ready to explode. Coiled, ready to spring. Okay, either way, whatever I'm doing, springing or exploding. Erling Haaland. Come on.
Good player.
Good player.
Good player. In the words of Dean Jones, good player.
Solid player. Ryan Gravenberch has turned into a great player for Liverpool. Admittedly, quite a slow start with injuries. But Ryan Gravenberch, I think, is a very good example as well.
Is that cheating, Jack?
Yeah, I was going to say, does the Bundesliga tax count on Ryan Gravenberch?
Fine. Okay, if you're created in the Eredivisie, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying it's that. It's just that he played about 6 games in the Bundesliga ever.
He was rubbish in the Bundesliga.
I don't even think that's fair. Like, he just didn't play any games. Yeah. Like, Bayern bought him and then he was just like, nah, I'm not going to use that guy, sorry.
That's true.
And, yeah, I mean, I'm on your side on this, Doogie, but I'm not sure that's the argument. You've definitely
got better players.
Okay, I don't know why I went to him second. Kevin De Bruyne, people.
Yeah.
People were saying, oh, why have you spent that money on someone out of Wolfsburg at the time? Maybe. Famously, quite a few pundits from Sky. And I think the Bundesliga was even more of an unknown than it is now back then. Bobby Firmino at Liverpool.
Yeah.
What a player. And he arrived at Liverpool when they were rubbish as well. Or definitely not the force they are now.
He was He didn't start great, did he? Because it was the last knockings of Brendan Rodgers.
I didn't think Brendan Rodgers wanted him.
No, so this was the big thing, wasn't it?
This is the first Michael Edwards signing.
This was the laptops thing. Remember the laptops thing? What's the quote? What's the exact, what is it? It's like, there was a day, I think it was a Daily Mail article, and it was a bit of a hit piece, really, on the criticism of Rodgers. And it mentioned, like, well, the summer business wasn't really up to scratch, and Roberto Firmino was signed by laptop nerds or laptop gurus or something like that.
I feel personally and
it
offended.
Was like, I think it was nerds or geeks.
Yeah.
I think it was geeks.
Yeah.
Is the
and
word
it was
I would
like,
think was used.
It was completely dismissed as like, that is a disaster and it's the hierarchy. Turned out to be like one of the best false nines in the history of football.
He was phenomenal. I mean, can we just briefly, I mean, I'll give the other examples, but I didn't actually clock this at the time, or maybe I'd just forgotten. In 2017-18, he scored 27 and assisted 17 in 54 games. That season in the Champions League, he scored 10 and assisted 8 in 13.
Wow.
Bobby Firmino had some phenomenal years, not just as a facilitator, not just as the link man. He was a great goal scorer in his own right. So Bobby Firmino, definitely not part of this Bundesliga tax idea.
Do you know, most of our episodes end up devolving into just three dudes sitting around naming old players and loving it. And we've done it again.
It's good stuff, though. It's good stuff. Okay, Son Heung-min, I mean, enough said. Absolutely phenomenal signing. Going back further as well, Edin Dzeko at Man City, he was great. Another Man City one, Leroy Sané even at Man City. Absolutely brilliant for seasons before he did his ACL and then joined Bayern. Never really sort of delivered on his Man City form at Bayern, at least in terms of consistency. Or at least not across an entire season. He's always very good in the autumn, Leroy Sané. Doesn't like the spring. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang at Arsenal.
Yeah,
he was brilliant.
Yeah.
He was very, very good. Dominic Szoboszlai has proven to be a very shrewd addition for Liverpool. Omar Marmoush has got off to a good start at Man City. Mickey van der Ven and Ibrahima Konate, defenders, sure. Same with Josko Gvardiol. This idea that players cannot deliver, having joined from Bundesliga sides, I'm afraid is just a load of rubbish. And it's always been rubbish. Yes, there'll be flops joining any club from any league. Do players joining clubs in sort of turmoil situations that chop and change players more regularly under huge pressure, do they always step up and deliver? Absolutely not. And you'll notice that Liverpool and Man City, the best sides of the last 10 years, most of the players that join those settled sides that are winning regularly under managers that know what they're doing in their stability generally manage to deliver. It is all circumstantial.
Sam, I've just had a real thought. And there is someone else for your double down of punching their way out of a column and making themselves a success after joining from a Bundesliga side. Joel Linton.
Hey!
He was on my list too.
Joel Linton, for the first 2 years, absolutely mocked mercilessly whilst they tried to play him as a number nine. And then suddenly, that renovation into a central midfielder and, you know, goes down as one of the best Newcastle United signings of recent years, I would say.
I like it, and it does. It fits the demographic here in terms of, like, we're talking about the failures more often than not, the mitigating circumstances being miscast, for example. And I'm not saying that they miscast Joel Linton as a striker necessarily, because he was a striker for Hoffenheim, but he was not a primary goal source. And he never was, because his, like, I remember watching him at Hoffenheim and thinking, your shooting technique is actually terrible. Like, the way he strikes the ball is so scruffy. And if you're going to be a bona fide finisher, you're probably going to have to be a bit better in that area. And so he didn't really score that many goals. If memory serves, and this is genuinely a memory serves because I'm not looking it up, but he was on about 7 or 8 goals a season at Hoffenheim. So apply your Bundesliga tax to that, Doogie. It's down to 4 or 5. So they spent a lot of money on a guy to carry the can up front who basically couldn't do that. Again, how much of that is his problem and how much of that is poor recruitment.
Yeah, I remember him at the time as well, because he was constantly in the headlines or definitely being talked about as, you know, this flop, this useless player, etc. But every Newcastle player said, effectively, he's going to get picked every week because he's absolutely phenomenal in training and is just unbelievable in small-sided games, but he's just not a finisher. And then they were like, let's put him in midfield. And they've never looked back.
I love the fact that there was those quotes being applied to that, because he did, in fact, turn into a poor man's Moussa Dembélé. And that's exactly what they used to say about Moussa Dembélé. And just checking, he scored 7 goals in his final season at Hoffenheim.
There we have it.
You can't fault my memory.
But Sam, I know that you sort of weren't just as cross with as I was with this title, and you actually did some digging into sort of relevant data that does suggest that there's basically stylistic differences between the leagues, which everyone knows. But what did you find?
Yes, you may now refer to me as the sprint guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about sprinting again.
Go for it.
There was one particular commenter last week on YouTube that wasn't happy. So I've doubled down and I'm going for it. Physical data is becoming easier to obtain and utilize. And we don't want to just use that, over-index on that and ignore everything else. But it's notable that we can use sprint data to highlight a pretty significant difference between the Premier League and the Bundesliga. And I'm going to use gradients data again. So formerly PFF, for those of you in the US that are familiar in US sports, Gradient Sports. There's an ESPN piece at the end of last season by Ryan O'Hanlon, who ranked all 96 teams in Europe's top five leagues. So literally every single team from those five. According to how much sprinting they do per 90.
That's God's work.
So, yeah, I mean, from one perspective, it's going to be indicative of something. It's not indicative of everything, but it will tell you something. So per 90, how many kilometres does Team X sprint? Mm-hmm. Ranked from 1 to 96. Okay. Top Bundesliga club, Holstein Kiel. Mm-hmm. Sprinting 2.35 kilometres per 90. And we're defining this, by the way, as any time during the game that any of the players on this team is hitting 25 kilometres or higher, that is registered as a sprint, and that amount of different distance is collected. And then they add it all up, and that's the collective sprint. So Holstein Kiel, the top sprinting Bundesliga club last season, 2.35 kilometres per 90. They were 35th out of the 96 teams. Really? 17 Premier League teams were higher than them. Mm. Only Arsenal, City and Everton sprinted less on a per 90 basis. Then you go down towards the bottom of the list. 9 of the 18 Bundesliga clubs were 80th or below.
Really?
So we're not just talking about Premier League versus the Bundesliga here. We're putting Europe's top five leagues together in one big table. And half the Bundesliga is in the bottom 80 to 96. So it's Leipzig are in 80th. And they were averaging 2.1 kilometres. So just to refresh your memory, Holstein Kiel, 2.35. Yeah. And Tottenham, who were top of the whole list, 2.98. Augsburg, 95th out of 96, second last overall, sprinting just 1.8 kilometres per 90. There's a pretty big difference here between and it's just one metric, but I just thought it was a neat way of summarising that when people say like, oh, the Premier League is faster or it's more intense. And when you get stories like Kai Havertz was really struggling with muscular injuries and he was talking about the intensity of the league. This is probably what they mean. Mm. That's the raw data spelled out. Like, it's a faster league. It's a more intense league. It's probably a bit more physical. And I thought, always found that idea quite difficult to reconcile, because I watch Bundesliga football and I just see this.
That's kind of what I was going
to
ask about.
I just see box to box. So what this has to mean is, while the Bundesliga players are running up, they're not clocking the speeds. They're not going as fast. Mm-hmm. So the athletic quality of Premier League players is just superior. Mm-hmm. And so when a lot of Bundesliga players move over, they are treated to something faster, stronger that they've ever seen.
So when you get like a last line attacker, like a Timo Werner, who looks, I mean, he looked quick in the Premier League, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't look as, the gap isn't there anymore.
Yes, I'd say, and I'd also say, unfortunately for Werner, that he wasn't clever enough to figure out how to mitigate those circumstances. I would say that working in Aubameyang's favour is that he was clever enough to figure out how to, okay, I'm not quite as, the gap between my speed and my opponent isn't as big anymore. But he was clever enough to peel off into certain areas, manufacture certain shots. He knew where he could get particular shots off and create certain types of goals. And we used to joke about it, Jack, but like, Aubameyang scored the same goal a lot.
With that left-hand side of the box and whipped in.
It was just the same goal. But he was smart enough to do that. I don't think Werner was ever smart enough, unfortunately, to create any scenario, repeatable scenario that could mitigate those problems.
Yeah.
And I've seen Kai Havertz change physically over his time in the Premier League. And I don't think that's a coincidence either.
Mm. It always feels like Timo Werner didn't like taking shots unless there was no defender between him and the goalkeeper. Unless it was like a one-on-one, he didn't have the talent or the ability on the ball to manipulate chances when there was defenders in front of him. Whereas the best players that have adapted, Son, Aubameyang in particular in forward areas have so much more natural ability in tight spaces and can shift a ball and then whip it.
Yeah. I was just wondering, I don't know what conclusion to draw from this, but so many of the players that you named that have been those successes from the Bundesliga, they haven't just been successes. Like, half of them are like some of the best players we've seen in the Premier League for the last 5 years. And the other half are on their way to it. Mm-hmm. So like Erling Haaland will go down as one of the greatest strikers of all time. Kevin De Bruyne will go down as one of the best footballers of all time. Son has been a legend of the Premier League for the last 10 years. Who else have we got? Van de Ven and Gvardiol are like two of the best centre-backs or full-backs that we have in the league.
Sane was one of the best young players in the league when he was here.
So they're not just like these guys that you've met, a lot of the guys you talked about, they're not just coming to the league and surviving or coping. They're in the top 50 players in the league, the top 30 players in the league. In De Bruyne and Haaland's case, the very, very best. I don't know if that supports the claim or not, because I don't know if it means that to be that successful player from the Bundesliga, you have to be so good to make that jump. Or I genuinely can't make my mind up, because I wasn't ready for your list. And it's like, I just happened to notice that they're all so good.
Absolutely. I think what's also interesting is looking at how Bundesliga exports have done to other leagues in recent history as well. I mean, Jude Bellingham at Real Madrid, do you think he's had a problem adapting to Real Madrid? Maybe that's, you know, character related and situation related and determination related. And obviously his physical side to his game is absolutely on point. But 38 goals and 28 assists in 100 games for Real Madrid, that's freakish. He started better at Real Madrid than any other player in history in terms of goal scoring and beat Ronaldo's record in across the first 15 games. Just absolutely insane.
I was just thinking about that point, though, and how you kind of think about these players. Is the point here that maybe a middling player from the Bundesliga who isn't kind of top of the game, who isn't kind of one of those players you're like, wow, could be a game breaker? So we're talking about your Haalands, your De Bruyne's. I think we'll be talking about Florian Wirtz in this category at some point as well. Those players are going to succeed because they're smart enough to deal with and adapt to those physical differentiations and then thrive within those circumstances. But if you're coming in kind of at the peak of your powers, and look, being a middling Bundesliga or Premier League player is still an incredible achievement. I'm not trying to belittle that whatsoever. But does that make it a harder jump to make, you know, to join from, you know, let's say into a team that are struggling, as we pointed out earlier, or into a mid-table Premier League team? Maybe that physical divide is a little bit more difficult to make the jump on, and maybe that's the issue with some of these players in the middle of the pack.
It might be. You know, a lot of the guys that you've referenced there and talked about, they do have like joker cards to play. Like Haaland, obviously, is a ridiculous finisher, but he's also like one of the five fastest players in the Premier League. He's probably one of the five strongest too, so he has that about him. Gvardiol is a physical freak.
Yeah.
Like, he is ridiculous. Van de Ven is so fast, his hamstrings can't even take it. Aubameyang was rapid. De Bruyne was compared to Steven Gerrard because of his physical dribbling nature and the way he would bounce off players and carry the ball. A lot of these guys have outstanding traits which have then lifted them above the median line. And maybe like a player there that Jack's kind of reaching for in that comparison is someone like Leon Bailey, who was a good Bundesliga player, but didn't have any physical traits that would allow him to overcome the challenge ahead.
I think looking forward as well, looking at the standard of players that were bought by Premier League clubs this year, I think they are really, really outstanding players, to be honest, at least on Bundesliga evidence. And let's see how they adapt. But I have very little doubt that someone like Florian Wirtz or Hugo Ekitike can thrive at Liverpool. Mainly because Liverpool are an excellent side as well. The one I have most concerns about, unfortunately, is Benjamin Sesko, just because he's joining a very dysfunctional club under huge pressure already.
He's a physical freak, though, so
he might
be able to play his way out of that situation with just the athletic gifts.
And then you look at someone like Jamie Gittins. Competition is going to be his biggest thing as well. Will he get the game time? Is this going to be is this the Christian Pulisic or Timo Werner of 2025 in many ways? Xavi Simmons at Spurs feels like a player that I think will adapt really well to the Premier League.
He's very boom or bust in this scenario, isn't he? Like, I don't think there's a lot of middle ground for Xavi Simmons.
I just think the pressure of playing for Spurs as well, I think it's quite easy to look pretty competent at Spurs quite quickly.
Okay. I thought you were going to go a different way with that when you said that, yeah.
No, I think he'll be pretty decent. And then Nick Voltimalda as well. He's got off to a brilliant start. We talked about him endlessly last week. But going back to my earlier point about players moving abroad and in different scenarios, yeah. Randal Kolo Muani went to PSG, massive money.
Yeah.
Crazy time in PSG's history. They just got rid of Messi. They got rid of Neymar. That summer they signed Dembele, Barcola, Gonzalo Ramos and Ekitike. Doué joined the following summer. Kvisha Kvaratskhelia joined in January. It's no real surprise that Randal Kolo Muani in this scenario, who isn't on the same technical plane as someone like Kvisha Kvaratskhelia or Barcola or even Desiree Doué, eventually has left and ended up at Spurs.
I would say just a massive, massive line through his name. Luis Enrique and strikers, it's weird. Yeah. Like, we could do a whole episode on this. He will buy a striker for 60 to 90 million euros, take one look at them and go, I hate you. And that's it. Their career is over. So I don't think any of that's his fault.
For sure. And then I think the other key example in terms of a bit like a Kai Havertz kind of turning it around later in their career, Ousmane Dembele. At Barcelona, again, fitness issues. Missed over 100 games across his time there.
So probably missed over 100 meetings too for sleeping
in. Yeah, exactly. And clearly his attitude, a bit like Jadon Sancho, massively lacking at different points, you know, big gamer, etc., staying up late, not going to training. And now look at how he's clicked in the last, well, it's only really this calendar year. Actually, no, he was very good at the end of it. The whole of last season, basically, has really clicked with Dembele.
But it was the calendar year that was like, oh my God, he's on like a goal.
Went absolutely supernova. So I just think it's so much more situational than anything else. And this idea that Bundesliga players can't work in the Premier League, I think we've quite successfully disproven with the odd caveat that, yeah, not everyone works. Of course, not every transfer works. Look at the most expensive transfers in football history and how many of them are surefire successes. Very few of them.
Most of them have been really poor.
Exactly.
Yeah, that top 10 list is a shambles.
It's miserable.
I think we did an episode on it on Football Ranks in 2020. We probably touched on it again a couple of years later. We could do it again next week if we wanted to, and it just would not look any better. Would not look any better whatsoever. But Florian Wirtz is in that list now.
He is indeed.
That's a good segue, isn't it? Let's finish off by revisiting Wirtz here. Why do you think he has struggled over the first four games?
I think partly opposition. I think Newcastle and Bournemouth in your first two games, it's pretty tough going.
Welcome to the Premier League.
Welcome to the Premier League, for sure. Then you're playing against an Arsenal side who have probably been the best defensive side in the Premier League since Man City dropped off in recent years. Burnley. Yeah, that's a tough game as well in many ways. Everything feels tough at the moment when you're joining a new side with so many new parts as well. I don't think he's the only new signing that hasn't really shone so far. I don't think Milos Kerkez has pulled up any trees. Jeremy Frimpong spent a bit of time on the bench getting used to it. But Florian Wirtz, as that big money signing, has been the guy under the most pressure. I thought he looked exceptional in the Community Shield for large parts of that. I think he'll be absolutely fine. It's also the nature of, you know, partly Liverpool's midfield has changed around him. Gravenberch has missed games. McAllister's missed games. Szoboszlai's been playing at right back. They don't have Trent anymore. There's just so many different factors in this Liverpool side. They had a pretty dramatic window right up until the final, you know, final window slamming shut, as it were. There's a lot of things going on there. Do I have any doubts that Florian Wirtz can work in the Premier League? Like, absolutely not. I think he's shown enough for Leverkusen for a number of years to be amongst the top 10 players in Europe. And I think generally that level of player finds it eventually in the Premier League. But he's playing a slightly different position in a very different formation than he was used to at Leverkusen.
I mean, he's played like, it's been difficult at times to really figure out what he's being asked to do, or if what he's actually doing on the pitch is what he's been asked to do, or if he's going above and beyond to try and get things going. Like, he shouldn't be dropping that deep to find the ball. Like, need to bring him into play a little bit higher up the pitch. And then when they have the ball in the final third, like, chill out a bit, like Liverpool chill, because they try to attack so fast all the time, which is kind of, it's always been the way. But, you know, Florian Wirtz used to camp outside opponents' boxes and ping the ball from left to right and then work a crack open very gradually and then just play the pass. And the great thing about him is, generally speaking, his decision-making in the box has always been so, so strong, which is the mark of a very intelligent player. Like, he doesn't play the pass when it's not on. He waits, he's patient, he recycles it 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and now it's on, and then we'll do it. We'll dink that in there. And Liverpool don't play with patience at the moment because they look all over the place. And so they're not getting the best out of someone that really needs to see the ball a lot more. And up until this weekend, because he touched the ball so much against Burnley, who obviously sat really deep, his touch count was, like, in per 90 was way down. Like, the Athletic were running through something on their Saturday show with John McKenzie, and he pointed it out. Wirtz was on about 40 touches a game, and in his last season with Leverkusen, he was on 80. Like,
What are you expecting?
Let him get into the game. Let him control the game. And I'm sure they'll get there. It just, again, it feels like a bit of a byproduct of the fact that Liverpool, quite frankly, have been a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
They're also changing the point of their attack. I think there's two things at play. One of them, I think Sam's just touched on, in that he's picking the ball up far deeper than he was at Leverkusen. Part of that is that Liverpool are shifting to a new system. Obviously, this might be helped out by the fact that Solskjaer looks like he's going to be playing right back for the foreseeable future, which is something I didn't have on my bingo card for the start of the season.
Damn good at it.
He's doing so well.
So well. And also that gives him that extra body in midfield because he can tuck in and invert. And look, then suddenly you do have that space for Wirtz to play him. But also, bear in mind, Liverpool's creative fulcrum for the last couple of seasons has been Trent Alexander-Arnold, right? He's been playing from that sort of quarterback, right-hand side position, tucking in on the inside of a back four and playing on the sort of halfway line. You're now asking your point of attack to completely shift. You know, that creative impetus on the pitch is coming from a completely separate position. It's going to take players time to work that out, right? Like, they're not suddenly looking up and going, okay, where's Trent? How do we get the ball to him now so that he can open something up? And actually, that'll take reps. I think it'll be fine. I do think that Sam's spot on in that they need to get him closer to goal at the moment. And maybe that is just adapting to the new formation. But it does feel like whilst his off-the-ball work has been really good and I think has been overlooked in this discussion, he's been excellent in terms of the way he's closing down, the way he's putting those shifts in midfield.
And he's always showing for the ball every time, always with his arms out like that.
100%.
And like, it's not like he's hiding. Mm-hmm. That's not happening.
And also, like, as in, we talked there about physical deficiencies from the Bundesliga to the Premier League. I don't think Wirtz is showing any of that. Like, it's not that he's being overwhelmed or knocked out or marked out of games. It's just not quite clicking in the final third yet. It'll come.
Is worth noting as well is, as Sam mentioned earlier in the podcast, we are filming this on Tuesday before Liverpool play Atletico Madrid. So maybe he's had an absolute stormer in that game.
Maybe.
But so far in the Premier League, yeah, work to do across that team.
Yes, I think so. Just on the idea of fitting new pieces together that Jack brought up there, it's not just Liverpool that are suffering with this as well. Like, Michael Cox wrote a piece in The Athletic this week which talked about how the goals per game rate in the Premier League so far through 4 weeks is actually dipped off quite significantly. And of course you'll know, Doogie, as well as I do, because we were part of it. There weren't very many goals last weekend in the Premier League. Like, I looked at the Saturday scores for the 3 PMs and it was 0-0, 0-0, 0-0, 1-0 at one point, and that was Fulham. Jack's just patting his chest there. And Cox argued that is a direct result of just the sheer amount of changes that most Premier League clubs made this summer, and how attacking play, it needs rhythm and it needs connections, and that can only be worked on through reps and through time. So just because Wirtz cost 116 million doesn't mean he can understand his teammates any quicker, especially if Liverpool have big problems throughout the spine of the team, which, let's be honest, they have, and Wirtz isn't the only issue. Salah can't seem to get into the game before the 80th minute. They're going to have to figure that one out too.
100%. Yeah, I normally panic when I see that I've got a wedding on a Saturday, not because I don't love weddings, but because I think, oh, I'm going to miss so much football. But this Saturday, I really didn't mind at all. It didn't seem like an absolute thriller. It does also feel like there's some very well-organised defences in the Premier League at the moment. There doesn't feel like there's the whipping boy that we've seen in the last two seasons. Plenty of work for all these new signings to do to adapt. But I do not think Wirtz will be a victim of this Bundesliga tax.
No. And sorry, to be clear, you also don't believe in the Bundesliga tax.
I don't believe in it.
It's not real.
No, exactly. No. It's circumstantial. It changes from player to player.
I think it's a good lesson in trying to look at every scenario individually and trying to determine what happened. Like, you can easily sit there and be like, Sebastien Haller, what a flop. Not his fault.
No.
Not his fault. And it can be the case for a lot of them. Some of them not, unfortunately. Kevin Mbappé, you have my apologies. You have been savaged on this podcast. But most of the others, maybe not.
You also, we as football journalists, we as football fans, we only see and assess what is happening on the pitch. These players are moving countries. They're trying to adapt to new teammates, their partners, their lives, etc. It's not easy to just transfer at will for big pressure into a league that is like a goldfish bowl of pressure. There's so much media consumed around it. And some players just aren't up to it. But it's not a thing of German players or Bundesliga players.
Fantastic. Well, I think we've managed to get through that whole conversation without at any point sounding like Tim Sherwood and going on about the Premier League is just different and sounding like proper football men. So I'm quite proud of us.
I think we did a good job.
Because halfway through my notes, I was thinking, don't sound like Tim Sherwood. You have to be really careful here, Sam, not to sound like Tim Sherwood.
Tim's not the only one. There are, yeah, there's a lot of pundits out there that do just, yeah, go for the basic. The Premier League's different.
But it is though, isn't it?
It is a little bit different.
No, I always made it. Never mind. Okay, cool. Right, that's it for this week. Diggy?
Thank you very much, Sam. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Cheers for joining me. And thanks for supplying the topic. Always good to have an impassioned subject, one of the panel really feels and believes in.
And don't you worry, guys, I've got plenty more topics that I'm passionate about throughout this season.
Jack, thank you for chipping in with your wisdom as usual.
Thank you, Sam. All the leagues are different. That's what makes them good. That's exactly. Why I enjoy them. Like, it's just like that argument, and sometimes it's put out, it's like Premier League's just different. Yeah, of course it is. It's like La Liga's different to Ligue 1, which is different to the Bundesliga, which is different to Serie A. Like, all of the leagues are different. They all have their good bits. They all have their bad bits. Mm. Alas, we move forward. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, yeah. The Latvian League is different.
Absolutely, yes.
It's very different. I'm not convinced it's real. I'm still not convinced I wasn't just dreaming for that whole time. Anyway, shout out to Christus for keeping me company and meeting me in Riga. Shout out to all the listeners and to the watchers on YouTube now. I guess I have to add that in too. Yeah. Thanks for everyone that interacted and watched last week's video, the first one that Doogie uploaded. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoy this one. I'll see you soon.